Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insights segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It's down to business for a new Prince George's County Council. Newly elected members were sworn in yesterday, and the gavel of council chair was passed from Calvin Hawkins to District 1's Thomas Dernoga. So what's the plan? What's the charge for this new county council emboldened with youthful vigor? Well, joining me to talk about this are District 8 Council Member Edward Burroughs III and Crystal Oriada representing District 7. Lines are open if you have a comment or question about the new Prince George's County Council. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Councilmember Oriada, congratulations and thank you for joining the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here and excited to be joining the County Council.
Absolutely. And of course, Councilmember Burroughs, good to see you again.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us today.
Let's talk about a comment that we heard, I believe it was either, I think it was today, about calling this the People's Council. Councilmember Oriada, I'll start with you. Your thoughts about that?
I think it's fitting. I think we really see ourselves as people that understand that it's not about us. It's about our communities, the residents that put us in office. And we really want for the council to have a two-way conversation with the community. We don't want to be dictating just our ideas, but we really want to have a transparent government, one that listens to the community, the one that centers the community first over development, big industry dollars, but it really puts the needs of the residents at the center. And so that's what we think our agenda is a people-centered agenda. We think that we see ourselves as the elected officials to represent the people. And I think the reason we use that word is so we don't forget that this isn't about us. It's about the people that put us here and making sure that we put them first in every single policy and budget that we put forward.
You don't believe it was that way before?
No.
Why not?
I think that the council center developers over the community. I look at just my district that I can speak fully for. All we see is liquor stores, tobacco stores popping up on every single corner. We don't see healthcare facilities. We see a lack of shelters. We don't see quality jobs. We don't see an investment in the services that are desperately needed for the community that's crying out for them. But we see some of the talking points. I always say I have to see it in the policy. I have to see it reflected in the budget. It's what made me run for office is because I didn't feel that my community was being represented and the people were being centered. And I think it's the reason I beat an incumbent, which never happens in Prince George's County. It's because the community agreed that they didn't see themselves represented in the council. We brought 150 plus people to testify, for example, around redistricting when they attempted to gerrymander myself and another council member out so that we couldn't run for office. And they, not one of those people were with the council on the redistricting. Every single person that testified wanted it to not go forward, wanted it to be a fair, fight at the ballot box. And the council voted and didn't listen to not one single person that showed up. And that same can be said for so many other things that came before the council. And I think that's why I don't think it's been that way before. I think there's people that represented different districts that felt that way. But I don't think the council as a whole moved in a way of centering the people. And I think that's going to change. And I'm excited about it.
Councilmember Burroughs, you are part of the new blood of this county council. But you're somewhat, we could call you a resident sage because you've been, you're one of the older new people. Yes. But, all jokes aside, what do you believe this, as I described earlier, this youthful vigor will bring to this new county council?
We're going to take it one day at a time, very quickly, though. We have something to prove. You know, we were sent here to deliver on behalf of the people of Prince George's County. And so every single day, we're going to be driving toward that agenda with urgency and vigor, as you mentioned. You know, oftentimes government is slow to act, but people are counting on us today to make big, bold decisions that will uplift the people in the county. And so we're prepared to do that. We actually intended to have a legislative day tomorrow, but there were some technicalities that prevented us from doing so. Now that we have the gavel, we're going to be introducing legislation this month. Traditionally, the council goes into recess the month of December and comes in January. But we have a host of bills that we're excited to talk about to hit the ground running on day one, and that's what we're going to do.
Can you give me a preview?
Absolutely. You know, for too long, the standard for development in our county has been, you know, what makes developers rich, not what uplifts or makes our county better. And as Council Member Oriotta mentioned, our county is inundated with 24-hour tobacco stores, these storage warehouses, these townhouses, these gas stations on every corner. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to put a stop to that. You're not going to dump whatever you want in our county any longer. I mean, the standard for development is what's going to enhance and make our county better. And for too long, Prince George's County, they've been allowed to just do anything that they want. So there'll be bills around that. Something that I'm very excited about. And really, I have to give a shout out to my frat brother, Marion Barry. You know, Marion Barry laid the framework around supporting our youth through his summer jobs program. I know that's something that Councilwoman Oriotta and the majority of the council be laser focused on, having a more robust year-round jobs program for our youth. We also want to put in bills that will force contractors that we give our tax dollars to recruit, hire, and train people who live in our county, mm-hmm. and to put them to work on these county projects and to ensure that they have health care and benefits and strong wages. That's also very important to us. The council traditionally has played no substantive role in education. It's solely been financial. But I think you'll see from this council that we're going to be laser focused on improving our lowest performing schools. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds of millions of dollars in the park and planning budget that we can leverage to help support our most vulnerable youth. And what does that look like? That looks like taking our lowest performing school, and the moment that those students leave that building, there's a park and planning bus picking them up, taking them to the community center with tutors and academic enrichment, mm-hmm. support for their families, and things of that nature. So I've listed a few things, but it's a lot more than that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to two members of the new Prince George's County Council. If you have a comment, if you have a question, they are here, and you have their ears. So give us a call again at 202-319-7810. Your councilmanic districts are next to each other.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They border the District of Columbia.
Right.
You know, Councilmember Oriotta, what is the biggest concern for you and improving the quality of life for your constituents?
I'd say two things are probably the biggest concern. Bringing quality development resources in our community, not feeling like we're a throwaway community, we're the forgotten district or area in Prince George's County. A lot of times people joke and say we're part of like DC because we're right on the border, and so we're just like the extra ward, and so we're not actually in Prince George's County. So I think that's reflected in the way we're treated, and seeing like our streets aren't paved, our grass isn't cut on time, there's just trash left in our strip malls. We haven't seen real investment in infrastructure. So just making sure that our community doesn't feel like it's left when it comes to resources and dollars that are invested in the county. And I would have to also say safety is a huge issue, because it's a huge issue for my residents. It's something I heard on the doors. I knocked over thousands and thousands of doors, and communities want to feel safe. And so it's really important to me. I was at a funeral last week of a young boy that was murdered while raking leaves in his yard. I don't want to have to be speaking at those types of events every single week. And so for me, it's really important for me to take a thoughtful approach. I don't want to do rhetoric. I don't want to have just, you know, some great speaking points. I want results. And that's going to take time. It's going to take more than just me. It's going to take all of the stakeholders at the table. It's going to take arguing, disagreeing, trying things and not working and then trying again. But I'm really intentional about making sure we do something to really tackle safety in my community. For too long, it's been an issue that people just use as talking points, and they haven't actually done the hard work of thinking about how do you really make our community safer.
So to both of you, and I'll start with you again, but I also want, you know, the council member to address this as well. Mm-hmm. What does that hard work look like? Mm-hmm. There is a, you know, relatively new chief with you know, new ideas. He has the support of the county executive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think no one can say that the police leadership is not working hard.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be, as we have seen in discussions after the curfew,
mm-hmm.
that there needs to be a set of new ideas. Mm-hmm. So what does that, have you formulated mm-hmm. something outside of right. more police on the street and more community
exactly.
policing?
Mm-hmm. And I think you hit the nail on the head on that, because the problem is, for so long, the conversation is just isolated to police. Like, so when we talk about the community not being safe, people think we're saying, oh, well, the police aren't working hard. That's a critique on them. The problem is the burden of safety has only been on the shoulders of our relationship with police in our communities. And when we think about policing, policing isn't prevention. It's not their job to prevent crime. That's not what they're there to do. They're there to, if something happens, mm-hmm. right, you call them in a time of emergency, they investigate, they find the person that did it. So then when we're talking about safety, we're talking about prevention. What prevents the crimes from taking place? And I think part of the problem is that even when people think about my committee that I chair, they always just say public safety. They forget the health and human services part. And that's the prevention work. And so I think the first part is thinking about the services, thinking about decriminalizing poverty, thinking about reentry programs in a thoughtful way, thinking like what Councilmember Burroughs talked about, after school programs. Because when we think about even the time that a lot of youth commit crimes, you know, we could talk about the curfew, but if it's not in the curfew hours, right, then does the curfew actually do what it's intended to do? But if we actually think about the hours that is high crime hours, right, and Ed can talk more about it because he has great ideas, and thought about, okay, what can they be doing in those hours? How could we work with park and planning? How could we work with nonprofits to actually have something for these young people to do that we see doing carjackings at an alarming rate?
Yeah.
Because that's real. And so that, I think, is part of the conversation, is making sure that we're not saying safety is just police in our community, that okay. it's deeper than that.
Councilmember Burroughs.
No, I agree with Councilmember Oriotta completely. When it comes to crime, especially juvenile crime, no young person wakes up in the 12th grade and decides to become a hardened felon.
Mm.
In reality, there are warning signs as early as elementary school that a young person's in crisis. From the moment they start getting suspended or expelled or engaging in destructive behavior, it's important for the parents, of course, but also the school system to provide the right wraparound supports and services for them at the first sight of crisis. And if you don't do that, all the data shows that the behavior will get worse and worse and worse. And then you have young people who are in their teens committing carjackings. And so it's so important that we identify and provide wraparound services for the young person earlier on and mm-hmm. their families earlier on as a key to addressing this. I also believe that it's so important to keep our young people busy, engaged in productive activities. It's so important that we support our Boys and Girls Clubs. We support our different sports and activities and the arts. We want our young people busy and engaged as much as possible after school and on the weekends throughout the summers. And as Councilwoman Oriotta said, the curfew was more of a political statement than it was anything of substance. the majority of juvenile crime occurs after school hours, but not in the wee hours. And so it's so important that we keep our young people busy after school, that we keep them busy on the weekends, engaged in productive activities. It's also important that we give them jobs. Quality employment is one of the biggest deterrents to crime. You know, poverty is one of the biggest causes of crime. Mm-hmm. And so to the extent that we can provide quality experiences, quality internships, quality mentorship programs to our young people, that's one way to address the juvenile crime issue.
We are talking to two members of the Prince George's County Council. We're talking to District 8 Council Member Edward Burroughs III. We're also talking to District 7 Council Member Crystal Oriada. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We have quite a few people on hold, and I promise that we are going to take those phone calls and as many as we can possibly get to. That includes Barbara calling from Largo, Ray calling from Maryland, Malik calling from Fort Washington. But we are going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you are on the phone, do not hang up. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the new Prince George's County Council. My guests are District 8 Council Member Edward Burroughs III and Crystal Oriada. She is representing District 7. Join us on the phone at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Malik, calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say I am really, I'm pleased to hear the guests talk about a lot of the root causes as it relates to our youth and what's happening and taking place with crime and stuff. So often that we just hear things, you know, just money thrown at the problem and it's never solved completely. But the reason for my call is the litter, the Lord. I'm in Fort Washington and I'm really, my home is not too far from the Branch Avenue, Route 5 thoroughfare. And the litter is just becoming worse and worse as the years go. And I know during the COVID time, the county exec mentioned that it was piling up because of COVID. Well, COVID is lifted, everything is back, you know, everything is open, but the litter is still there. So I'm wondering if your guests had any response to that or any new, fresh, new ideas as to put into, you know, the problem with trash on the side of the roads.
Okay, Council Member Burroughs.
Yes, thank you so much. And I represent Fort Washington, so I'm happy to be able to talk to someone in District 8. You know, I hear you loud and clear is something that I heard almost every day when knocking doors. We are a dignified community, and it's important that our communities are pristine and clean and truly reflect the people who live there. A couple things. We need to continue to educate people on not littering. You know, we could have someone out there picking up trash every day, but if the practice still continues in our own communities with our own people, the problem will never be solved. With that being said, you know, we've been very forward with the county executive and her administration about the need to increase litter pickups throughout the county, especially in District 8. One of the things that I was able to put in the budget, we put an additional $500,000 in the Forest Heights budget, and Forest Heights will go throughout District 8 to pick up trash. That's never happened before, but you know, we can't rely alone on the county government at this point. And so we have a municipal government who has agreed to go throughout our entire district to help with that. So the moment they get, you know, we just passed it a couple months ago. We're going through the process to make sure they get the money. And when they do, there'll be a number that anyone can call in our district and they will come and pick up litter within a 24-hour period.
But how I, as someone who finds litter to be one of my pet peeves, wherever you live, it's one thing to pick it up. And I know you spoke about, you know, education, but how do you balance education? I mean, do you need to fine people? Do people need to be spanked about this? I think so. I said it. And I don't like it. I don't like litter. I grew up in Prince George's County, don't live there now. But if I'm driving on the road wherever I am, it seems just to be just a sinful habit, and Lord have mercy. So what do you do about that?
We absolutely need to hold people accountable who litter and engage in illegal dumping. You know, there's several hot spots throughout the county where there's just massive illegal dumping. And so the county has a partnership where we are installing cameras and we are prosecuting illegal dumpers. But to your point, yes, we need to hold the people who are junking up our community accountable. No doubt about it. I don't know.
Real quick, because I've got a lot of folks to get to.
No, I agree. I think that this is a huge issue. It's a problem in my community. I go through strip malls and just see litter everywhere. I think an extra layer to Ed's point is also keeping the businesses accountable. A lot of these management companies for these strip malls and places in our community, they should be keeping up their space, right? They should have, make sure they have a company that comes out that cleans up the trash in the parking lot, but they don't. And so that looks like if you have these green teams coming in or the county government coming in and doing it, we should be then charging these establishments for us having to keep their areas clean. So I think also holding these businesses accountable for not maintaining their property, you wouldn't see that in certain places in Maryland, right? There's some counties that, you know, they wouldn't stand for their businesses allowing for their establishments to look that way. So I think that's part of the conversation as well.
Malik, thank you so much for your comment. I want to piggyback on something that you did just said, Councilmember Oriata. You spoke about strip malls, and there is a concern about strip shopping centers that are, some are boarded up, the quality of business and huge empty parking lots. But yet we don't want vaping stores. Do we need another liquor store? What do you do about that?
Right. I think it just comes from smart development and strategy. And I think that's one of the things we are really excited about doing moving forward, like leveraging some of the agencies that already exist, right? So, for example, we have the Economic Development Corporation. What are we doing to make sure we're creating a pipeline for our local small minority businesses to use these storefronts? What type of projects do we have that has dollars dedicated to if we need to subsidize the cost for renting spaces? In DC, we saw a movement of pop-up spaces for like abandoned different storefronts, or where they had partnerships with reduced rates for people that are just trying to get started. So I think there's lots of things we could be doing. We could be investing in maker spaces. So you could have a shared kitchen model or shared retail space. So it's something you saw more in DC. Shared kitchen model is a really easy way to explain it. So if you had caterers or different businesses that needed to come in because they couldn't afford to have their own commercial kitchen.
Okay.
And then you could do it with also 3D printing. And so I just think we could be thinking differently about the spaces and what we put in the spaces. And then we could be investing some of our resources there as well. And I think that's the direction that we want to go in, is having a hands-on approach. Because right now it's just, to your point, there's a strip mall, and whoever wants to come there and they decide the market, we can't have a Whole Foods here, you know, we can't have a restaurant here. And so who wants to come? Okay, it's a liquor store that wants to come. Okay, it's a vape shop that wants to come. And the county needs to intervene to help orchestrate that relationship. Because I understand if you have a strip mall and it's all vacant and the only people that are coming to you are these types of businesses, and you need to pay your mortgage and you need to turn a profit, then you're going to take the businesses that come. And so we have to take a hands-on approach to say, we're not just going to let it be what it's going to be. How do we foster that development inside of certain areas in the community?
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Barbara calling from Largo. Thanks for calling, Barbara. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks. Congratulations to you both. I just wanted to put in a plug. While I'm greatly support providing services to children who are at risk, I completely agree with utilizing all of these recreation centers that are attached to schools that go empty after school. It absolutely makes no sense. But I also want you guys to also not forget your high performers, because a lot of parents have to make the decision after elementary school or even before whether or not they want to continue their children in public education. The lottery system does a disservice to kids who want to stay, who want to go to these tag schools but can't get in, which is what happened to my son, who can't get in because they weren't a lottery position. So I just wanted to make that clear. We need to raise the standards also in the education system and not just provide support to kids who may be struggling, but also provide incentives and encouragement for kids who are high performing.
That's your wheelhouse, if you have a short comment for her.
Yes, thank you for calling from Largo. Councilwoman Legay represents Largo and is doing a phenomenal job, our new vice chair. But yes, you are absolutely right. The reality is that we have to make our school system more attractive to retain high-performing students, no doubt about it. We need to increase the amount of school choice, the amount of school options. The lottery program that we currently have is completely insufficient. And so when you look at a place like D.C., they have so many more options for students of all abilities. And so we hear you loud and clear, and I appreciate you raising that. And that's something that we can definitely work on. I mean, this is a council that wants to hear concerns like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are taking our cues and direction from people like you. And so to the extent that we can create more programs for our high performers, including leveraging the park and planning budget, with our robotics programs and things of that nature, we absolutely need to do it.
Barbara, thank you so much. I do want to ask about another thing. There seems to be a bit of a consternation in Prince George's County about the growth of Royal Farm stores. Anybody have any thoughts about that? No one wants to see another one. Yes, they are everywhere. This is certainly not, this is not a discussion about whether or not you like the chicken. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
But it's another convenience store kind of establishment. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about should that be pulled back a little mm-hmm. bit, or is that a concern?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a concern. It's something that is on our radar, and part of that legislative package that we're talking about when we think about community-based development and what does the legislation need to look like to help us curb seeing these type of if it's convenience stores, liquor stores, tobacco stores, storage facilities popping up on every corner, because what we're trying to do is really think about what does our community need? How do we diversify the offerings of what comes into our community? We just can't see the same five things on every single corner. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the issue. No one's saying one's not a problem, but why do I need seven, right? Why do I need it on every single corner? Why do I have like other options? And I think that's what the community outcry is really about. No one would be complaining if there was one or two. The problem is that if you just see five Royal Farms and six gas stations, five tobacco stores, and you don't see a restaurant, you don't see entertainment, you don't see a doctor's office, you don't see anything else, it's like a glaring we don't care about you sign in your community. And so I think it's definitely something that is on our list, because we're not trying to shut down all of these different industries. What we're trying to say is, if you want to be an entrepreneur in our community, if you want to bring something into our community, we need more options than just that. Our community deserves more than just that on every single corner.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Ray, calling from Maryland. Ray, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So most of my questions was answered, but one I'm still missing. One, the council said that you have to go back and get the youth at early signs. One of the problems is you guys took all the trades out of the schools, which need to come back in the schools. So if you're trying to really deter crime for the youth, you have to give them trades now. Second, a lot of them already lost, so get tough on them when they commit those carjacking. Get tough on them. Thirdly, those tobacco stores, what's the plan to really just stop them? It's too many of them. What's the plan to not allow new ones to pop up? They all over the place. And I'm starting to see them close to schools now. What's going on? What's the plan for that?
And if I may, I really like Ray's question, particularly the first piece about trades. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, no disrespect to former President Obama, there was all of this push for STEM and science and higher education. I'm all for that. No question about it. But I'm not going to work on my sink. I'm not going to work on my... If I try to work on my HVAC, I'm going to freeze. And so I think that Ray is absolutely right. There needs to be more emphasis on the trades, but also make sure that young people who may be thinking about it also understand that you can make a very, very good living doing something like that, whether you decide to own your own business or work for a company.
Oh, absolutely. The trades is something that this new council will be laser focused on. I'm excited to announce that Crossland High School will be the trades hub of the southern region, my alma mater.
When is that going to happen and how is that going to happen?
It is already in process. It's already in progress. And so there are a number of trades that are currently there, but we're adding to the complement every year. And the council has invested a considerable amount of money to support their CTE program, is essentially the trades. But one of the things that where the council will come in is that we're going to be pushing project labor agreements. Because if a young person gets a trade in the school, it's so important that we're able to then make sure that they have a job once they graduate. And so we want to make sure that when we have these big contracts, whether it's building the schools or building a library or building, paving the street, for example, we spend millions upon millions of that right now and they're in the county. And there's very, very few requirements that are in place that requires these contractors to recruit people who live in our county, to hire people who live in our county, to train people who live in our county, and then to put them to work. And through these project labor agreements, we're able to say, you need to hire people from this county, and they need to have health care and benefits and the ability to retire and all of those things. So not only do we want to get the young people involved in the trades and educate them and get them the training and the certifications while they're still in school, we also want to make sure that when they graduate, that there's quality employment for them and that they're able to benefit from the tax money that we're spending anyway. It's so important. I mentioned Marion Barry earlier. I'll mention him again. It's so important that we recirculate the tax dollars in our own community as many times as possible. And Councilwoman Oriata has a bill already for the tobacco store. So
yeah, go yeah, because that's important as well.
Yeah, so that was the main question, right? So we thought about, okay, we had this bill that was introduced that would stop more tobacco stores from coming. But the question is, well, what about the ones that are already here? Like, it's already begun the saturation. And so we tried to think about two things. As I don't think this is the be-all. I think it's going to be a longer conversation. One is looking at regulating the hours of these convenience stores, because right now they're 24 hours. So one, how we can stop them from being 24 hours in our community. And then secondly, how can we change it so that they're not allowed in anything but industrial zones? A lot of the tobacco stores are just on the corner of residential. And if we make this type of change, then they have 2 years to comply. And so this is a way to actually force out the tobacco stores that are currently just saturating residential communities and then force them into what we consider the industrial zones so that we don't just see them on the corner of all of our communities, and then regulate the length of time that they can stay open. And then we already have a bill on the books now that would stop them from opening up, what is it, 5 miles between each other. And so I think it's going to be a step-by-step, you know, legislative process where we're going to have to look. When there's a hole or a gap, we look at it again. And we're just really committed to making sure we tackle this problem in a thoughtful way. And I don't think people thought about this issue, because the issue is that they go under convenience stores. We call them tobacco stores, but legally they're convenience stores. Mm-hmm. And so then defining tobacco stores was part of the conversation, making sure that they could not fall under the guise of convenience stores anymore, that they had to, you know, call a spade, you're not a convenience store, you're a tobacco store. So those are all the types of things that we're looking at to make sure we tackle the issue of these tobacco stores on every single corner.
Ray, thank you so much for your thoughtful question. Kamal, calling from Maryland, your comment or question.
Yes, thank you. Greetings, Harold and council members. I'm a lifelong resident. I just want to, I guess, state my problem real quick and see what your suggestion or solution may be. Lifelong resident of Prince George's County, 50-plus year old man. Back in 88, when I was last year of high school, 18-year-old, I committed a felony. You know, had served a little bit of time and then, you know, got out, went to college, you know, straight A student, summa cum laude, got all these skill sets, and I wanted to apply for some jobs in the Prince George's County government and seemed to always get rejected. I applied for federal government, and they kept rejecting me. So I wound up, you know, doing some other odd and end things along the way, but I noticed that the attitude, it appears, for jobs that I was super overqualified for, would deny me the opportunities because of some of the laws on the books in Maryland and because of, I guess, some of the general attitude toward returning citizens.
So, Kamal, I hate to interrupt you. I don't have a lot of time. What's your question?
Yeah, well, that is my question. How would you treat, I heard the councilwoman Oriaga, mentioned something about reentry. I was wondering how, is there any provisions being made to address the, you know, abundance of jobs not going filled that are people who, you know.
Well, let's see what she has to say about that. Please go right ahead.
Making sure that we have resources for returning citizens is a top priority for me, and I think this new majority, I've been advocating for returning citizens for years. I think we have to look at it a few ways. One, legislation around priorities given to contracts that where these companies hire returning citizens, right? That we have like point scale system. So how do we make sure that we push organizations and companies in a direction of hiring returning citizens? There was also a piece of legislation that a former District 7 council member Karen Tolles introduced that I would love to revive, that would create a pocket of funding specifically to hire returning citizens that could be used for county jobs within Prince George's County. So basically putting our money where our mouth is in hiring returning citizens. And then we could think about legislation in housing. There's a bill I'm working on right now with advocates, which would make sure that returning citizens weren't discriminated against with housing opportunities. So I think we have to look at it from every single angle, making sure that we do everything we can do with the jobs we have as a county, making sure we're creating opportunities with the partnerships and the money that we give out with different contracting and businesses, making sure that we create legislation that removes all the possible barriers to access to resources. And we are going to pick up the challenge of doing that as a new council.
Okay. Kamal, thank you so much for your phone call. Just a little bit of information. As I, we all know that all eyes are on Georgia right now. There has not been any call on the Senate runoff between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. However, right now, with approximately 38% of the vote in, Raphael Warnock is leading Herschel Walker, about 56% of the vote to 44.5%. Again, about 38% of the vote, and we will continue to keep an eye on that race. Let's talk really, really briefly. The county executive spoke about the Washington Commanders and keeping them at FedEx Field. Any thoughts about how that may very well happen?
I think I'll take this because that's kind of close to my neck of the woods. I think.
Yeah, but are you a fan? Tell the truth. I mean, you may like the Philadelphia Eagles. You can be honest.
Oh, my gosh. How do you know I like the Eagles? Who told you this?
That was a guess. I know. But everybody, everybody likes a winner. Okay.
I like the Commanders, too. I do not like the Cowboys. Officially, I do not like the Cowboys. I know that's, like, the hard line for people in the community. But I think to the county executive's point in her speech and address, I think the key is that we love them to stay, but we cannot build our plan around them staying. And so the real focus is the Blue Line Corridor. We just got, $400 million of an investment from the state around building the infrastructure around the stadium. So I think we need to look at this as an opportunity, two parts. One, we're going to put the resources in to make this a destination area, to make sure that we have other amenities that we build into the infrastructure. But we have to think about it not just from the lens of, begging and hoping that the Commanders stay, but if they were to stay or if they were to leave, that we would build this corridor in a way that could be self-sufficient and that it could have industry. And so I'm really focused on that, like looking at it from that lens about we love them to stay, but if they don't, we're still going to invest this money. We're still going to build up the infrastructure. We're going to make it so that it's thriving in the Blue Line Corridor. And that's something that we haven't seen in a long time, because if you go around the stadium, we don't have restaurants, we don't have entertainment. There's a lot of opportunity there. So I'm excited about what we're planning on bringing.
You were about to say.
Yes. And to that point, whether they stay or go, we have to build up that area. Mm-hmm. But with the same tenacity and aggression that the county executive has for building up the Blue Line Corridor, there's so many communities in the county that have been completely left out of quality development. Mm-hmm. And so we need to revitalize and uplift Temple Hills. Mm-hmm. There's so many places that, essentially you're talking about resources and you're about to put in hundreds of millions of dollars through the Blue Line Corridor. If you invested that anywhere in the county, it would be successful. And so I just want to make sure that the southern part of the county, that we receive our just due as well. I mean, we pay taxes as well, and sometimes it feels like the southern part of the county does not get the same level of resources or attention as the other parts of the county. And so while I applaud the county executive's plan around the Blue Line Corridor, we need a Temple Hills corridor. We need an Oxon Hill corridor. I represent Eastover. We need to revitalize Eastover. And so I think it's just important that we leave no part of Prince George's County behind, and sometimes that's what it appears to be to me.
One of the things that happened this summer is that Charles County was seen as the most affluent county, predominantly African American county in the state. Prince George's County has held that moniker for decades. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked about it when I worked in other parts of this country. I mean, people knew, I should say black people, were aware of Prince George's County with that status. But this has changed. What do you believe has changed? And how do you snatch that back, or is that just something, in your opinion, that it's gone, it's gone?
A couple of things has occurred. First, D.C. has gentrified, and D.C. has pushed some of their residents in poverty en masse to the county. Individuals with money in the county, some of them have moved down to Charles County. And so, essentially, I mean, it's really a byproduct of gentrification. from the city into the county, and then a lot of the Prince George's County folks have moved to Charles County. And so it's, and also Prince George's County has a million people in it. I think Charles County has, what, about 100,000 or less? Mm. And so we're talking about apples and oranges by comparing the two. And I don't,
Yeah, I think, to your point, like, it's this layered issue that's happening. It's that, it's a part of, like, the cost of living is changing also in Prince George's County. I live in Sea Pleasant, and I could not buy my house for what I bought it for 2-3 years ago, for what it would go for now. Like, I think on my block, a house was for $500,000, which is insane to me, in Sea Pleasant, Capitol Heights area. So that's a reality. People know they can get more, larger property, land, for half the price if they go down a little bit further. And I think it's part of, like, they want better schools, education. So you have a lot of families that are saying it makes more sense for us to move to a different county. So I think it's a layer of issues that we're seeing happening right now in Prince George's County that cause that. But to Edward's point, I think it's hard to compare. But we do see there is a phenomenon of people leaving, and there's reasons, and that's something that we have to think about as council members.
Since you are newer than Councilmember Burroughs, mm-hmm. I will let you have the last, kind of the last word. What's your biggest challenge for the county council moving forward, in your opinion, Councilmember Oriana? I'll give you 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge ahead of us is just making sure that we execute on the people's agenda that we've created. I think that's going to be our biggest challenge. I think we have a strong majority that we're going to be able to issue great legislation. We have to make sure that we work hand in hand with the administration to make sure it's seen through to the finish line.
Councilmember Edward Burroughs III, Councilmember Crystal Oriada, thank you so much for talking to us. Good luck, and duck. That's the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, December 6th. I'm Harold Fisher.
Good night.